Produced by Jeffrey Grisellius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall, this is Yes Music Podcast, episode 468. What Do They Do Next, part 19b, Tony Kaye.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
This week, Mark and I are looking at Run Like Hell, which is the first thing that Tony Kaye did, not literally, when he was asked to dust off his Hammond B3 and contribute to a record called Pigs and Pyramids, an all-star lineup performing the songs of Pink Floyd, presumably by producer, engineer and mixer Billy Sherwood, who he knew rather well after spending many months on the road with him on the 83-date Talk Tour during the summer and autumn of 1994. As Mark and I mentioned last week, the list of personnel on the album leads like a roll call of greats of rock, and the single song on which Tony Kaye plays includes vocals by Jason Scheff of Chicago, guitars by Dweezil, Why Can't I Use My Own Surname in My Own Live Shows, Zappa, bass by the almost omnipresent Tony Franklin, drums by Ainsley Dunbar, who had previously played for pretty much all rock royalty, and teamed up with Franklin in Whitesnake, for example. And on the keyboards, Yes founder member Tony Kaye. The album contains a variety of Pink Floyd numbers, but Kaye adds his deft touches to Run Like Hell from The Wall, a song I've always really liked, with its hard-edged dystopian sound. It kicks off from the first moment with pulsating bass and drumming. Guitar is just the right kind of tone, and that Hammond sounds brilliant in the background. Background vocals phase in pleasantly, and the lead vocals almost rip your head off with their intensity. I love the way the bass zooms out of the texture, and although the keys are lower in the mix, it still sounds fully authentic and true to the original, which I realise I haven't heard for a long time. Synth additions in a solo manner are masterful and exciting. I'm assuming that is Tony Kaye, but we're back to the same Billy Sherwood questions as in our recent chat with him. Whoever added those solos, they are fantastic, but not as good, perhaps, as the little hints of Kaye's own Hammond soloing ability towards the end of the song, which leap out and take hold brilliantly. There isn't really an opportunity for Kaye to break free, but what he does add is perfect for this context, and I bet he really enjoyed being back in the studio with this bunch of musicians, even if it was only virtually, I'm not sure. A really strong performance and a tantalising taste of what Kaye was clearly still capable of bringing to the party. Well, I can't listen to this re-emergence of Kaye without also sampling the other major Yes-related song in this collection, Comfortably Numb, which I suppose features a kind of alternative Yes lineup of a different kind, with Billy Sherwood on vocals and guitars, Chris Squire on bass and vocals, and Alan White on drums. Who needs Howe, Rabin, Anderson, Banks, or anyone else? This three-man version of Yes might have been a force to reckon with, who knows? Certainly Sherwood's vocals are very fine here, as the song starts at fairly low pitch. Squire's bass is just as you'd imagine, and his backing vocals sumptuous. In fact, I think that's him singing the main line after the first bit of Billy. Suits me, of course. Alan is the quintessential, understated, but still precise and creative player. Billy's guitar soloing is fabulous, and I can see why this song has been included in three or four, maybe, compilations over the years. Billy cracks out the, what is it, steel guitar or whatever, which adds a lovely new texture, and he's definitely captured the menacing tone of the vocals, making a wonderful contrast to Squire's triumphant style here. More proof, if anywhere needed, that Squire should have recorded a lot more lead vocals. If this is what the power trio version of Yes could have produced live, I would definitely have been there. Brilliant, compelling stuff and a perfect tribute to Pink Floyd for me, culminating in a bit of an alternative Yes choir ending. If only they'd added Tony Kaye into this mix.
Greetings, friends. So this week, Kevin and I are going to be doing part two of our What Did They Do Next series, taking a look at Mr. Tony Kaye. So as we mentioned in last week's episode, after Tony Kaye and Trevor Rabin left, Yes, after the Talk Tour, they both went and did totally separate sorts of things. Trevor went back and worked on his soundtrack material and got back into that sort of musical endeavor. And Tony Kaye did other things besides music, like getting into the restaurant business, which was very interesting. And I believe he ended up moving to the Cayman Islands. I'm not sure if it was during this period or if that was after when he moved to Caymans. But, you know, he did a few non-musical endeavors, but then did get back into the swing of things, like with this musical project that we're going to be talking about today, which is the tribute CD that he appeared on called An All-Star Lineup Performing the Songs of Pink Floyd. Now, these CDs became extremely popular in the 2000s and even a bit earlier, but in the 2000s especially, these types of releases became extremely popular. So on this album, Tony Kaye appears on the song Run Like Hell. He appears with Dweezil Zappa and with Tony Franklin, the drummer, and the other person kind of slips my mind who it is at the moment. But those two people are of note to me, mainly because me being a huge Frank Zappa fan would be familiar with Dweezil, his eldest son, and Tony Franklin, who's a fantastic fretless bass player who's been on a few records that I really enjoy, like the Blue Murder album and The Firm with Jimmy Page. But one thing I find interesting about this song is that Tony Franklin is very dominant on this song. His tone is really gigantic, and every time he slides his hand up that neck, you can hear that distinctive fretless bass sound on here. So he seems to be the focal point of this song. I don't know if that was intentional, but it sure ended up being that way once they mixed this. Tony Kaye is here in fine splendor with his Hammond organ. I believe that he kind of sits back for most of the song and kind of opens up a little bit more towards the ending of the song. He doesn't really go too crazy with his playing on this, but you can definitely hear him in the mix, and you can definitely hear when he starts doing some of his trademark licks in there. Unfortunately, there isn't much more to talk about as far as Tony Kaye on this song. He really kind of kept it pretty basic and didn't, like I said, he didn't go too much out of the structure of the song and how it was originally played by Richard Wright. So, yeah, I don't know what else really to say other than that it was a decent performance, and I just wish that he would have appeared on more songs on this album, because there would have been definitely a lot more to talk about. The other song that might be worth a mention, though, is Comfortably Numb, which was done by Billy Sherwood, Chris Squire, and Alan White. So that leads me to believe that Alan and Chris were the rhythm section, and Billy did pretty much everything else on this song. Vocals, guitars, lead guitars. And this is a really interesting version of the song. Why I think it's more interesting than the Run Like Hell song is because the first half of the song is pretty much the standard version of the song, how Pink Floyd performed it. But when they get to the second verse, the arrangement is totally changed around. Billy introduces a new guitar sort of figure in the song that's not anything like Pink Floyd played, and yet they still sung the verse properly over it, which I thought was very fascinating, to be quite honest with you. So I kind of drawn to this song than the Run Like Hill, unfortunately. But, you know, talking about Tony Kaye, he is definitely a very competent keyboard and organ player, as we all know, and he did a great job on this song. I mean, really, I can't say much more complimentary a thing than that. He did play it very well. Him and Billy become great friends, and he appears on many, many, many other sort of compilation albums and tribute albums as the years go on with Billy. And then, just as Kevin said, Billy and Tony ended up going to Japan together to play a bunch of shows in which they do a mix of Yes songs, and I believe some of the, I think it might have been even some of the Circa stuff and some other material. I can't remember all of it, but I know that they became very close friends and still are, from what I understand, and, you know, have done lots of recordings together and have toured together quite a bit, even with Circa and Yoso as well. So maybe the next time we get around to Tony Kaye, we'll have some other more interesting material to look at and discuss. But until that time, let's go over to Kevin and we'll discuss this a little bit further.
We're talking about Tony Kaye and what happened when he came back to music after some time away. And Mark is with me now. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. What about you over there in Canada?
Pretty good. Little cold weather, you know, but nothing out of the ordinary for living in Canada.
Yes. And it's cold here as well, but nothing like you get. Anyway, let's talk about Tony Kaye. So he's back using that Hammond B3 or whichever model it is, and in this really great album. And I was interested to see what you said, that Tony Kaye sits back in this, and perhaps he plays more towards the end. And he played Richard Wright's parts generally from the original version of this song. But I was going to ask you about that, because often that's a question which we ask ourselves when we listen to these tribute albums. What do you, Mark, like on a tribute album? Do you like it, the music, to be more reworked than this, or do you like it to stick to the original? How much do you like it to be changed when you hear a tribute record?
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, it really depends on the artist, I find, because sometimes I find an artist will do it exact, and it's something that I actually enjoy, you know, because it'll never be exactly, because, you know, they have these different amplifiers, different guitars, so there'll be some tonal change within it, and plus, you know, no two singers sound identical so it'll never be exactly the same. But sometimes when a band takes a chance on adding in some different parts, it could sometimes sound better, I find, or sometimes it makes it more interesting, is probably a better word to use, because, I mean, we talk about the song that they're doing now, they probably stuck very much to the original arrangement and to the original parts. Tony plays pretty much the way Richard Wright did it, except near the end, he kind of opened up a bit and, you know, did a little bit more improvisational, I think, parts at the end as far as the organ work goes.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes, you know, a change here and there doesn't hurt it.
Interesting what you say, though, and I think we've discussed this before some time ago, and it's the vocals. Now, of course, instrumentalists, you can tell who's playing. I mean, you would never mistake someone like Rick Wakeman playing the piano or playing the synthesizer or whatever. You always know it's him. But I suppose because it's so personal, a singing voice, that's always going to be a bit different. And of course, with Yes, we have the unique voice of John Anderson in there, or, you know, whoever, John Davison, whoever it is, that they have pretty unique sounding voices. Depending on what you're trying to do a tribute to and recreate or do a new version of, perhaps it's the vocals which are always more different than the instrumental parts. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, definitely. I mean, let's put it this way. If I did a tribute to, let's say, Owner of a Lonely Heart, and I went and recorded it, it'd be probably pretty simple for me to try to get close to it musically. You know, you just try to do a sort of, you know, like a sort of, you know, 80s sounding kind of snare drum sound. You get this certain kind of bass guitar sound. But if I was to try to impersonate, you know, John Anderson's voice, I probably couldn't do it. Even if I tried my falsetto voice, I probably couldn't do it like that, right? But and if I did do that, then people might, you know, throw eggs at me saying, oh, you're just trying to make fun of him by doing that. Well, meanwhile, I would maybe try to do an exact impersonation. So I think that's why people try to do it in their own voices a lot of the times, because people might get the wrong idea, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Now, we spoke to Dave Kirzner about his 50th anniversary of Yes tribute package that he put together, which was so wonderful, and we picked his brains about this. But how far do you think a tribute version should go? Because, you know, you've heard bluegrass versions of Owner of a Lonely Heart and heavy rock death metal versions of of Roundabout. How far do you think people should actually go? Is it just all fair enough in terms of musical versions?
Well, I put it to you like this. If it's interesting and it's not meant as a joke, then I kind of say that it's open season. I mean, I've heard some versions of songs that are vastly different. Like, I mean, there's a band I listen to, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with them in England as much, called Typo Negative. They're kind of considered like a goth rock band. And they did a cover of Black Sabbath, the song.
Right.
And their version is like really slow. It's like, and the singing is like almost spoken. It's like, what is this? It's really slow, but it turned out really cool. Like it turned out totally, like, you could tell it's Typo Negative, but you can tell they're still doing a Black Sabbath cover. So that kind of stuff I don't mind, where they kind of put their stamp on it to a point where it still sounds cool, but it's not looked at as like, oh, they're taking the piss out of it, you know, doing it that way, right? But, you know, there's other bands that do it where I kind of like shake my head and go, oh God, why are they doing that? I think it all depends on the band. I mean, if they have a clear vision of a way of redoing it, then that's great. But I'd rather almost that they just keep it exactly the same if they don't know how to make it sound good if they change it.
Yes. And I suppose the the best example of cover versions or tribute versions, whatever you want to call them, that we've got from Yes, or those earliest ones that they did. And you know, the way they extended the beginning, they developed the ideas, they went in different ways. And isn't there that famous quotation from Paul Simon that he actually liked what Steve Howe did on America? Is that what I mean?
Yes.
That's what I mean, yeah, okay. Let me just do that again then. Actually, he liked better what Steve Howe did on America than the original. So you know, when you've got that kind of ability in a band, you perform, you create a completely different piece of music, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I totally understand what Paul Simon means. I mean, his version of this, like their version of it, is so etched in people's minds now as well. It almost seems like the definitive version of that song now. And I mean, and especially if you have the original artist's approval to that level, then you know you've made a great version of the song.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right then, well, back to this song with K on it, and perhaps not as far in the front as we would have liked. But there are some synths, aren't there, in this version? So I was just wondering what you felt, and it's the same sort of question as we asked Billy Sherwood a couple of weeks ago, which is, how much do you think K is actually playing? Is he playing all the synth parts as well? Because there's some great synth soloing on there, and we know that he's not, you know, he's much keener on piano and Hammond, but who do you think is actually playing that?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, it's no secret, like you said, that Tony K wasn't exactly huge on synthesizers. But I think that was mainly back in the day, like back when, you know, they were getting ready to do Fragile and stuff like that, where he kind of was snubbing his nose at that sort of stuff. I venture to say that the organ obviously is Tony K, totally. And I would venture to say too that I think that he also did the synth as well. I mean, we don't know for certain. I wasn't there, so I can't vouch for it. But I think that he's overcome his synth hate to the point of where I think that he wouldn't mind doing a couple of lines and leads here and there on a synth if he felt that it benefited the song. And, you know, Richard Wright used synthesizers later on in his, you know, Pink Floyd career as well. So it's not like, you know, he always loved the organ the best as well, Richard. I mean, he was always on it as much as possible, even in the later years when they did the reunion with, you know, Momentary Lapse of Reason and Division Bell. He was always on the Hammond organ. Yeah. And they had another chapter, I forget his name now, but the other guy who was like his second there, his backup, was the one who was always doing the kind of synth sounds and stuff like that as well.
Nice.
But I think that he also, you know, he also didn't mind doing it in the studio. So I venture to say that Tony K probably did everything, I would say.
Yeah, well, I think that's fantastic to hear. And I'd love to think that it was. And maybe one day we'll have him on the program and we can ask him questions like that. So we'll keep that in our back pocket. But let's just talk about the other Yes connection. Well, it's more than a Yes connection. It's a sort of alternative version, as I said in my piece, of Yes. So we've got Comfortably Numb with Billy Sherwood and Alan White and Chris Squire. I mean, you couldn't get a better lineup than that. But what I was interested in is this idea of a Yes power trio. Because if you think about how White and Squire, before the Buggles chaps came along on drama, they were playing stuff as a Yes power trio. So is that something you'd like to see? And what other configurations could you imagine of three members of Yes playing together really well?
Well, the power trio idea is interesting. But like I was thinking about this a while before, and that is, as a studio entity, I could see the three-piece working fantastic. I mean, Yes is one of those bands where you would definitely need supplementary players in a live situation. I could never imagine them being able to play Yes songs as a three-piece. There's just way too much other things going on for one person to do, I would say. Like, you know, playing the keys and the guitar and, you know, it would be too much. But in the studio version, I think that they could do it rather well. And I mean, we see it right here with those three doing, you know, Comfortably Numb. I mean, one other configuration, which I've always thought about when you think about three piece, what kind of a Yes three piece would work well? Because if you think of Genesis, when they did, you know, Then There Was Three Onward, it was only the three of them and they were just multitasking different instruments. So I always was wondering, what it would be like if you had like Billy Sherwood, right? Chris Squire,
yeah,
and Igor Koreshev. Now, how would that work? Well, I would say let's get Billy Sherwood to do the drums, to do the guitars,
yeah,
and do the vocals. You got Chris Squire to do the bass guitar and all the harmony vocals and even some lead.
Yeah.
And then you get Igor to do all the keyboard stuff. I mean, basically you have all the aspects covered.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? And, you know, I'd love to see Koreshev taking part somehow in Yes in the future. Who knows? But yes, that would be brilliant. And you're right. They are multi-talented, each of those Yes musicians over the years, pretty much multi-talented. And yes, you've mentioned Squire's singing there. Obviously, he's backing parts brilliantly. But on this version of Comes With Inanna, I seem to recall that he actually sings quite a bit of the lead there. And, you know, none of us who know Fish Out of Water, etc., think that he shouldn't be singing leads. But I think that combination could be brilliant. In the same way as Billy Sherwood and John Davison on the Arc of Life stuff just recently were sharing lead vocal parts. When you've got someone like Squire in the band, you've got to give him a chance to share that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, because he has a great voice, as we, you know, all know from Fish Out of Water. And I mean, he's also he also did a few other songs later on. I mean, on Fly yeah. From Here, he did a song. The Man I Used to Be, or I forget what the title is of that song,
yeah,
but
yeah,
he's saying that. And also in Magnification, he's yes, saying as well,
yes, yes,
right?
Yes.
And that's actually one of my favorite songs, is that song. And I've always loved his voice and, you know, having him as a lead vocalist. And I mean, even in Squawk It, I think he's saying as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely want that then. And my last thought about that Yes Power trio idea would be around the drummer. Now, obviously, there have been two basic drummers in Yes, Bill Bruford and Alan White. And White just strikes me as such an easygoing character and such a versatile drummer that perhaps you would always go for Alan White. What do you think in a Yes Power Trio? Can you see Bruford in there?
Yeah, I could see Bill Bruford in a Power Trio situation, because when he was in King Crimson, when they did Red, they were essentially a three-piece with, again, added people in there. So it can be done. But again, you know, I can only imagine Bill Bruford, if he was asked to do something like that, he would probably do some weird, odd thing. Okay, I'm going to do half my drum kit electronic, and the other end will be, you know, odds and ends drum, a garbage can lid, and all these other things. I can just imagine him doing something off the wall just to make it that much different, you know?
Absolutely. That would be great fun, wouldn't it? And a bit more of the union situation with them both on the stage at the same time. But I think perhaps two drummers and then one other wouldn't quite work in the same way, even though I know that Bill Bruford would love to do that, because he's always been trying to do the melodies on the drums, and particularly with those Simmons drums in the 80s, I suppose early 90s. Great stuff. Okay, well, there we are. Kay dipping his toes back into the music business in 2002. And I do have to say that the whole of this album is very, very much worth listening to. There are some amazing performances on there, and we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about the other musicians on his song there, Dweezil Zappa, etc. But really a good one to have on the shelf, isn't it, this one?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I look through it more thoroughly, there's a bunch of great musicians on here. And I mean, the one that Tony Kaye did, Run Like Hell, I mean, you have the great Tony Franklin on bass, who has just such a monstrous bass tone. I mean, that alone is worth purchasing the album just right there. So I definitely think it's one to have.
Yeah. Brilliant. Fantastic stuff. And fretless sounding based on his songs as well there. Brilliant. Okay. Well, let us know what you think of this version. It's freely available on YouTube if you don't have a copy of this. So just search for it, and I'm sure you can hear it, and put some comments on the show notes for this week. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.